At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, my name's Donna Fraser and I would love to tell you about Give Me Five, which is a Her Spirit initiative to get more women running and walking over the coming months. We passionately believe that every woman can enjoy running. Give Me Five is holistic and isn't all about pounding the pavements, and is designed to help you run more easily from breathing to posture, building strength and developing overall fitness. I will also be supported by the Her Spirit coaching team, who will take you week by week for 8 weeks on a small steps journey to a fun 5 kilometer walk or run. And I'm so excited to be supported by Claire Danson and Caroline Martin. Just go to www.herspirit.co.uk and click on our programs for more information on how to sign up and join me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast in the autumn now. Annie, my gosh, time has flown, hasn't it?
Don't you feel, though, Lou, that I don't know what month we're in? It's been such a weird year that sometimes I go, oh, my God. Okay, just a reminder that Christmas is how many weeks away? But I feel like we've missed...
Yeah, not far.
Yeah, we've missed a whole year. And sometimes I'm like, oh, my God, did the summer go? Like, what happened? Kind of thing.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm Louise Minchin. I normally tell you bad news on the telly. And I present this podcast, as most of you will know, with my lovely friend Annie Emerson, who is a fabulous triathlete. Annie, I've got breaking news.
Go on, then.
Actual broken news.
Oh my God.
I think I've mentioned to you and possibly to people on this podcast that I've got a sore foot. Yeah.
You have. You've talked about your sore feet. Yeah, you have spoken about them, which is always something. It's a real panic thing, isn't it? When you're a runner, anything sore is not good.
Well, our guests will talk about this. Anyway, the breaking news is that actually I did break my foot. In July 2019, remember I was limping at that party you came to?
Yes, I remember that party.
I broke it.
Okay, so you've been running around with a form of sort of stress fracture or something?
I don't exactly know. Something to do with my cuboid.
Oh, wow.
And I think I've done 4 marathons since I broke
it. You know, this again shows the sort of the power of the body and the mind that I, you know, always rant on about. But, you know, sometimes we are so much more capable. We know we're so much more physically capable. So what's the idea? It's going to be rebroken and reset and put back together again.
So, you know, do you know what? It sounds so ridiculous. And we'll talk to our guest about this kind of thing. I knew when I did it that it was really bad because it was really sore. And obviously it was sore for quite a long time. But I'm sure people listening to this will think, what, she's so silly. So I put it off because I was doing Norseman 6 weeks later. And obviously I'd been training, didn't want to miss that. And then there was another race and another race. And I knew when I'd done this virtual marathon, the London Marathon, that I was actually going to spend the time and go and see the doctor. So yeah, he took an x-ray. He goes, yeah, you broke it. I was like, oh, okay. But yes, it's going to have to be fixed, Annie, because obviously I want to continue doing this lunacy things that I do. And it's not best to continue on a broken foot.
And you know what? You'll come back stronger because you probably have been carrying that little injury, you know, subconsciously knowing that it's there and kind of looking after it, but still doing all the mad stuff. So once it's fixed and sorted, you're going to be faster. You're going to be a faster runner.
I'm just looking forward not to being in pain.
That's always a good thing.
Should we talk to her? I'm really excited. I'm always excited about our guests. But you asked me earlier if I knew our guest, and I'm like, no, but I have been stalking her on Instagram. She is a fabulous endurance runner. She's world famous for it. And she is Susie Chan. Susie, I love your posts. I love what you do. I'm so inspired by you, particularly where I am right now, to be on this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Lou. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm just going to... So your intro there was amazing. I mean, I think you're definitely my sort of person.
I saw you taking notes.
And I just want to say, I out of all the things I have done, I would never, ever jump off a boat into freezing cold water to do Norseman. But that is the thin end of the wedge as far as I'm concerned. So massive, massive kudos for doing that. Unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, but you do crazy. I mean, you're an endurance runner, and we'll come to the races that you've done. I mean, all over the world. Before we go back to the beginning, so what's the toughest race that you've done?
It was a race called Jungle Ultra, and it was in the Amazon rainforest over 5 days. And it was self-sufficient, which means you have to carry everything you need to survive on your back. So all of your sleeping gear and all of your food. They do supply water, however, so that was a luxury. and I just basically had to run from the Andes down to the Amazon basin in 5 days through thick jungle and a lot of water river crossings, which were a little bit sketchy, a lot of interesting creatures. I fell over a lot and it was very damp and rainy. There was a whole series, sequence of things which made it particularly difficult. And I ran that one with my husband. It was his idea actually. And by day three, he had to be pulled from the race because he nearly died.
So
that was stressful. And then I thought, oh God, we both can't just come back with nothing. Because I wanted to just stop. And I pushed on. But out of all of the things I've done, there was a point in that event where I had been scrabbling up a muddy mountain for 2.5 hours. And I kept sort of scrabbling up and sliding down and scrabbling. And I did that for 2.5 hours. And then when I got to the top, I thought, OK, that's done. I'll never have to do that again. And I went down the other side and it was really steep. And at every sort of three steps, I'm not even exaggerating, I fell over and then I was sort of covered in ants and got stabbed by sort of branches and things. And I just thought, I can't do this race. I can't do it. And just to quit in those sorts of races, the sort of protocol is to take your race number off and to hand it to somebody from the race to say, I'm out. But it's
a bit like, I'm a celebrity.
Yeah, you just go,
I'm out of this race.
Yeah, pretty much. You sort of, that's how you do it. But I was near nobody. I couldn't see anybody. And the next time I was going to see somebody was at the finish. And so I had to keep going. So I made it to the end of that day. And, you know, everybody said nice, soothing things. I went to bed in my hammock, poorly put up hammock. And then, of course, I started again the next day. But that race mentally broke me, which I think when your head is gone, that's the toughest thing.
But I mean, I don't even know where to start. Annie, you go.
First of all, Susie, can I say it didn't break you because you finished it. So it didn't break you.
I did,
you.
Yes.
And just to recap, so 5 days in the Amazon jungle, totally self-sufficient, yes. Averaging, I guess, yes. 50K a day or something, 250 kilometres in total.
It was 250 kilometres over the, I think it was 5 or 6 days, I can't remember. I think it was 5 days. So, and the normal format of these sort of multi-stage races, as they're called, is that it peaks in the middle with the mileage. But for this one, it actually just got longer each day, which was also a little bit soul-destroying.
And I think, Louise, it's really important that we just go back because what Susie's done, so, you know, obviously her spirit is all about encouraging women to do things that they never thought was possible. And if someone's just tuning in now, they'll be going, oh, I couldn't do that.
What?
Yeah. So, but I
couldn't.
You and I have something in common, Susie. Actually, we have something quite big in common. You were a little bit older, but at the age of 35, and I love, there's a picture on the internet that I found of you with a cigarette in one hand, looking very happy with yourself. And the picture of you as an endurance athlete. And you were 35, you were a single mum. You didn't have the money or the time to kind of be signing up to a gym, but you wanted to start setting an example to your then much younger daughter. I know she's 19 now. And show her that, you know, that you can be fit and that you can do these things. And so that was around about 10 years ago, I'm guessing. I mean, what you've achieved is utterly amazing. So my story was, Susie, the reason we have something in common is because I did that a lot younger than you. I was about 21, but I was the sort of the smoking, drinking, having a great time. And then suddenly thought, no, I need to do something about this. But tell us how it all began for you. What was that defining moment?
So to be really honest with you, it didn't come from me until a little bit later. So I was in this terrible rut. I didn't have much confidence. I was a single mom. I was skint, just sitting at home, drinking wine in the evening and smoking. And it really, just really, just, you know, 35 years old, I just wasn't in a great place. I was divorced as well. It wasn't great. And my younger brother wanted to do a marathon. He wanted to tick it off the life bucket list. So he said, he signed up to Athens Marathon and he said, look, come and do this half marathon with me. It was a local race to me. And I thought, half marathon seemed like I mean, it is. It doesn't seem like it is. 30 miles is a long way, but I signed up. I thought, you know, maybe I can do this. Signed up, and I can vividly remember where my first run was and what it was. I was trying to run around two football pitches in my lunch break at work, and I couldn't do it without stopping. It was probably on reflection, half a mile. Anyway, I kept chipping away, running up and down the road. And to cut a long story short, I turned up to this half marathon terrified, absolutely terrified. Everybody looks like they know what they're doing. They all look super fit. I thought, I'm never going to finish. And we started running. I had an underwired bra on. I had gym shoes. I didn't have the right kit at all. I finished. I can vividly remember the point in the race where I thought, I'm going to finish this. And something happened. You know, it was about 9 miles in, which was the furthest I'd ever run in my life at that point. And I just thought, I'm not dead. My legs are still going. I mean, they hurt. And I just thought, I think I can finish. And I just felt this real surge of, you know, confidence. And I ran and crossed the line, and I was so broken, but I just couldn't believe I'd run 13 miles. I just couldn't believe it. And I was just had this afterglow, which I'm sure if you've done races, you'll know, you'll understand. And it just made me feel good about myself for the first time in memory. And that was it. I just thought, I really like this. And I signed up for a 10K because I thought that would be easy because I've run 13 miles. And then it escalated quite quickly after that. I then went on to a marathon. And then I read in Runner's World about this race called the Marathon des Sables. And it just seemed so, I never knew that things like that existed, you know, running across the Sahara Desert. It just seemed like something you see on TV when you watch those beautiful travel programs. And I thought, maybe I could do that. And kind of almost accidentally signed up for that.
So, I mean, it's such an extraordinary and brilliantly inspiring journey. So you were how old when you did that, that half marathon?
I was 35. 35. So it was 2010. 35. I was nearly lost.
Listen, I've been last in plenty of races. Yes. There's nothing wrong with last. It's finishing.
Yes.
And before then, I mean, for example, you know, you say you were in a rut. Before then, you know, like when you were at school, etc., were you a talented runner?
Do you know what, actually? I've thought about this, and I think my PE teachers would struggle to remember me. I can remember I liked netball, and I was quite active on the netball team. And on sports day, I was actually picked to be part of the sort of 4x400 and 4x100 team. So I think I could run. I think I was quite agile. But in terms of anything outside of a PE lesson, I wasn't really. You know, it wasn't really something which I did.
I mean, it is just a phenomenal story, and it's not all been easy. I know that. You've certainly had some ups and downs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you have completed the Marathon des Sables more times than any other female British runner.
Yes, I have. Yes, yes. And yes, I have. I didn't intentionally start out that way. It just kind of happened. That race has become, it's very close to my heart. It's where I sort of, it sounds so cheesy, but I mean, maybe people who have done endurance events will understand this. It's where you find yourself, you know, you put yourself right on the edge of things, and then you complete them and realise what is possible when you really want it.
I think Annie's. What's the longest event? Would you say you've done an endurance event, Annie?
No,
or not?
No.
I mean, triathlon is sort of endurance, but you yes. did short distance. Didn't
yeah, well,
you?
I did. I did half. I did three quarters triathlon. There was an international race in Nice that I did, and mainly I've kind of stuck to marathons. You know, but I'm just.
I mean, marathons are. I would say genuinely, a road marathon is a really tough endeavour, actually.
So that's endurance, isn't it?
Yes, it is, absolutely. For me, they are physically one of the hardest things you do because, you know, you're on the road and it's all about time and digits. It's a very, really tough thing to do.
And Susie, I mean, you know about that because, and I can hear what you're saying. I mean, if we go back to the sort of Amazon jungle and stuff, there are other things that are going to make it a lot tougher. But you're just over a 3:23 marathon runner on the road. And I think that's absolutely amazing. It's curious that you didn't really run that much when you were younger. So you've obviously got a great engine that you've not discovered until your mid-30s.
I do wish I'd started earlier, actually, because I think I might have been quite good. I can't run that time anymore, not these days. I spent the whole of lockdown just bimbling around. But I do wish I'd started a bit earlier. And I think when you're new to running, the first few years, it's all PBs. And I was very focused on pace and minute miles. And, you know, and that marathon PB, I actually didn't intend to go out and run that. I just felt really, really good on the day, which counts for a lot. But I would say now, as I move on, through the years, it's definitely a little bit harder, and I have to work very hard to try and stay fast or stay fast by my standards. And I'm not sure if I can ever replicate some of those times I've done, which I am very proud of. But for me, as I've got a little bit older, the focus has shifted a little bit. And I think that as I reflect, the races which I really, really have enjoyed or really stick in my memory are the ones which I've done with my friends. They've been much more about the experience than me absolutely dying at mile 22, trying to cling on to a time. Then the races that, you know, about the experience are the ones which I'm definitely going to remember more fondly.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
So Marathon des Sables is what? How many? How far is it and how many days?
It's 250 kilometres over 6 days, but one of those days is an ultra marathon, and you can choose to break it down over 2 days or do it in one hit. And obviously the only way to do it, Louise, is in one hit.
Obviously you're going to do it in one, aren't you?
You get a day off the next day. You don't have to get up and run if you manage to run it all in one go.
That's how far that day, hold on,
Each year they change the course slightly, and you basically don't find out until you are there. And because there's quite a lot of prize money and it's quite a competitive race, so they don't release any of the routes. And so in the times I've done it, that distance has been anything from about 40 miles to 60 miles.
And you run it with friends, don't you? Did you run it with a friend the first time you did it?
No, I actually went out there all by myself. I didn't know anybody. It was, again, terrifying, but kind of felt right. I felt like I should have been there. No, I didn't know anybody when I went out first time. And you spend your nights at quite close quarters with your tent mates. You sleep under a blanket, basically, on the stars. Very, very close to your neighbours, so there's not much modesty goes on by the end of the week. And then the following times I've run it with friends, and in fact the last time, the only reason I was there was because I promised my best friend that I would run it if she ever did, and I thought she's never going to run it, and she only bloody signed up, didn't she? And that's Sophie Rayworth, and that was the only reason I went back for the fourth time.
And so Sophie Rayworth, for you who don't know, is also a news presenter, a colleague of mine, a countess, a friend of mine. And that's why I follow you, Susie, because she kind of, you know, I could see all their stuff on Insta and Twitter. And I mean, she's an incredible runner as well, actually, isn't she?
She's astonishing. And actually, I'm holding her up as a real champion runner because she basically is still running PBs now. And, you know, she'll love that, I say. She's a tiny bit older than me. I look at her and I think, gosh, she's still literally smashing it out. And so I want to be more Sophie.
Well, you know, I definitely want to be more Sophie.
I've sort of been inclined sometimes to think, oh, well, you know, just take the slower pace. It's all, you know, it's about the enjoyment of running anyway. Then I look around and I think, maybe I can. Maybe there is a PB left in me still.
Well, Susie, I can tell you there definitely is. You know, unless a leg drops off or something. These guys all know, Lou knows that I coach a couple of really amazing women, one in particular. I mean, Eddie's not chasing PBs any longer, but she is 77 and still running Ironman races. She gets really cross when I do her training. She's like, you've only given me 12 hours this week. And it's like, yeah, sometimes you need an easier week, Eddie. But I think if you look after yourself, I think this is what is key for women. Women do stay, you know, if we look after ourselves correctly, and we're allowed slip ups every now and again, but we can improve. You know, they'll get to a point, but you're only 45. So, you know, you're quite a bit younger than me, and a little bit younger than Louise. But I absolutely believe in getting better. So I think you've decided in your head you can't. We're just doing a bit of sports psychology. We need Josie Perry here. You can. You've decided in your mind you can't get quicker. And you absolutely can, because you're lucky. You've been gifted with a good engine. You don't run a 3:20 marathon.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, I'm going to tip in here for the endurance athlete. And I think what I get from you, and I think, Susie, one of the reasons that I'm inspired by what you do is, you can tell me in a minute, obviously. But the reason that I do the ultra events and the extreme triathlon events is not about times. It's about experience. It's about jumping in that cold water and being immersed in it and just being right on the edge of what's really scary and what I'm just about capable of.
But I agree with you. I agree with you that, and I love what Susie says about you know, finding herself in Marathon des Sables and those challenges and stuff. But if you just stop, rewind a couple of minutes, she just I picked up on a little bit of Sophie's getting PBs. Why can't I get PBs? So I'm saying she can, and there is a PB in there if she wants it. If she doesn't, that's a different story.
Oh, I need pep talk from you two ladies every day.
No.
it's been the last couple of years has been quite difficult for me because I haven't, my own sort of personal health hasn't been on point. And so I had to accept during that time that I wasn't going to be where I wanted to be. And during that sort of journey, I think I came to the conclusion that actually nobody really cares about my minute miles, because if you look at them, I am, in the grand scheme of running, relatively mediocre. What I can do is run a very long way and run for out. I could run for 24 hours without stopping, you know, so that's where my strength is. However, I do think maybe I should give the marathon, you know, one last pop, because I've never really put it down as one thing to do. I've only just run marathons as part of my training. And it would be nice. It would be nice to have a bit more structure to my training with a time goal at the end of it. But I'm slightly less driven by that now, I would say.
Tell me about training, because presumably, you know, I mean, I never train enough for the events that I do. Is that the same for you? And what do you do? Because I see all this stuff about you going, brilliant advice about how to, you know, do mile after mile, etc. But I mean, how do you fit it in?
Yeah, do you know what? When I look back at some of those, when I did an Ironman once, I was terrible, Louise. I was dreadful at it.
You see, you've done one.
I did one. I really suck at cycling, and I do not know how I've managed to fit it in. I'm a little bit. It's a little bit easier for me now because I'm now a sponsored athlete, and so I can structure my days around the training. But it is, yeah, it doesn't get any easier. And in fact, I reflect, I don't know how I managed to do the training. This year has been really a really odd one. I think I'm not alone in that. Everything was cancelled. There were no races. And I had that kind of limbo at the beginning of the year where everything I had mapped out had just gone. And so I was just running around for the joy of being allowed outside. But normally I will have a series of races in a year, and I will pick one or two of those to be my A race. They're the ones which I really care about, and I'll put my heart and soul into them, and I'll structure my training around those two particular events. And then the other events will come and go around it. I'll have marathons with friends or maybe even other ultra marathons. And those will be ones which I'll just put in the training bracket and they're to be enjoyed.
Do you have a coach or do you do it yourself?
I don't have a coach. No, I have a friend who's an elite runner and she's the one that really helps me when I injured my foot running around a track for 24 hours in a race. I got a very bad foot injury. And I couldn't run. For the 6 months afterwards, I actually couldn't run very far because I was rehabbing it. It took a long time to rehab. And so I shifted my focus back to 10Ks because that was really sort of as much as I could do. And I've got a friend who's an elite athlete. Her name is Lily Partridge. She's an elite marathon runner. She'll cruise around in 5 20-minute miles. And she will set me sessions, which are the sort of very specific, you know, 10 minutes on, 2 minutes off. I go through periods where she'll set me a session and at some point I have to remind her I'm not training for the Olympics. And I just want to kind of shave a couple of minutes off my 10K time. But she helps me with those more structured sessions. But I don't really work with an official coach in the long run.
Susie, you mentioned there that you had some health issues. In fact, they were pretty serious health issues. If I'm right, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was post 2017 Marathon to Saabs where you started to get a really bad cough, which you obviously thought was the sand, understandably. But tell us what happened thereafter.
Yeah, so I came back from the desert and I had a cough and it was nasty. And I'm not one for going to the doctor, really. I feel unwell to go to the doctor. And it just went shift and they gave me some antibiotics and I just went on my way. But this cough was very persistent. And it came to a head in Chicago Marathon. I was there with Sophie, actually, and my husband. And it was the last of our World Marathon majors. So those are the six of the biggest marathons in the world. And Sophie and I decided we wanted to do it. There are very few women that had actually done it when we decided we wanted to tick them all off. And it was the last race which I had to do to get that giant medal and get on that Hall of Fame. And I was not well. I was coughing. I mean, it's too much that I had to sort of brace myself or get on my knees to cough. And everybody was looking at me like, you can't run this marathon. And I was like, I will. Yeah, it was a dreadful race. Sophie was by my side for the whole of it. I can remember saying, if I black out, make sure they don't take me off the course because I want my medal.
Susie.
And then I finished the race. We were being interviewed and then I just fainted and I don't faint. And as mentioned, I'm not one for going for the doctor and my husband and you know, Sophie and people saying, you know, you can run 100 miles. This is not normal. And so I got on the phone to my doctor, I got on a plane home and they x-rayed my lungs thinking there was something more serious wrong with my lungs. And at the top of the x-ray, they found a huge tumour in my neck. And that was, I must have been in November. And then basically I had a large cancerous tumour on my thyroid. And to cut a long story short.
Susie, wait, just because you really rush through these things. So you were running these marathons with cancer.
Yes, and that explains why I wasn't feeling great. And as I was running and thinking I don't feel fit enough, and then I was sort of training harder and then feeling more exhausted, and I got into a bit of a downward spiral.
Oh, Susie.
So
what was the problem? What did they tell you about it? I mean, what did they say?
Well, fortunately, genuinely fortunately, thyroid cancer is one of the nicest cancers to get. It's very, very treatable. The survival rate is incredibly high. It's normally encapsulated within the thyroid, so it was a simple cut it out and get over. I had a few complications, so I had to have a couple of surgeries, but it was literally that straightforward. And and I tried very hard not to dwell on it. And that was, in fact, Sophie and I had arranged to do the Marathon de Saab. We had to keep this a secret in the April, and I had the operation
in November.
I had the operation in January.
Susie, you are, I mean, you're a machine.
Well, on reflection, I've had time to reflect. I did a half marathon, I did Vitality London half marathon, I think, or a half marathon, the big half, 2 weeks after surgery. And I didn't ask my surgeon if I could do it. Again, I was with Sophie and I said, look, I just want to be part of something. And I ran that. I probably shouldn't have done. And then I did a 50 miler, and then I did the Marathon Sub, and then I did a 100 miler. All the month after each other. And on reflection, I think I think what I was doing was just proving to myself that I was fine, that I, you know, this is what I do and I'm actually okay. And and actually, I think I got to the turn of that year and I thought, do you know what? Your point, Annie, about knowing, you know, to need to look after yourself. Sorry, that's my dog.
We don't mind dogs on this podcast. Okay. I want to talk about your dog anyway, so carry on.
Just going on your point, Annie, about knowing when to look after yourself. I think I dealt with the stress of that situation by running through it and by putting myself out there, you know, and making myself, you know, feel like I was tough and I could survive all these sorts of different events. And that is how I dealt with it. And what, in fact, I needed was to have a big rest. So I had a little bit of a rest towards the tail end of that year and just took my mileage right down and just took my foot off the gas.
You, Susie, you look amazing because a lot of endurance runners, I mean, I'm someone that, you know, all my friends go, yeah, it's all right for you, but I do get really skinny and I find it hard, like when I'm running marathons, to, you know, keep sort of feeling feminine and keep the weight on. But you always look amazing. So do you do anything special with your diet? So in other words, what I'm saying is you look healthy. You don't have...
She looks like a superhero.
She looks like a superhero. She looks like a model out there running these ridiculous events when she should be looking dreadful.
Oh, well, it's not all the photos make it to my Instagram feed. Some of them I actually do look genuinely hideous and considerably older than my years. So, I mean, I think I'm guilty in a lot of ways that other people do, that you get the nice photos on the Instagram.
Of course you do.
That's very kind of you to say. That's very kind of you to say. I think because I've had thyroid issues the last couple of years, my weight has fluctuated, but I'm sort of, you know, I'm okay with that now. I think that the years of the vanity have passed in terms of me worrying about what I look like too much. No, I am what I am. But no, I don't really, I don't really worry too much about what I eat. I eat relatively healthy, and I don't eat meat. I haven't eaten meat since I was 15. I eat relatively healthy, and then if I want a pizza, I'll have a pizza. I'll have a beer. I'll have a glass of red wine. You know, and it is all about balance. I think if I was the sharp end of running and those ultra marathons, you get some extraordinary elite runners who run extraordinary pace for hours and hours and hours. I'm not that person, and so, you know, I'll enjoy my glass of wine and I'll go out and I'll enjoy my 50 mile run.
What do you eat? Because that's, I mean, when I'm doing the any of the kind of extreme triathlons or whatever I do, I'm a real proponent of what I call real food. But I mean, it's not very good food. It's sandwiches with peanut butter and honey or something, not together. But what do you eat on those, for example? And nutrition is incredibly important, isn't it?
It really is, Louise. And this is where the truth out. The truth is, I will eat any old crap because you just got to get it in you. I have some of the things I have eaten. I mean, I have been pot noodles. They've worked quite well. They're very salty.
Oh, I can imagine that's a very good idea. Yeah.
Really high calorie. One pot noodle is like 600 calories. You're going to really salty, tasty. I've ordered pizza in a 100 mile race where I've ordered it at mile 50 and it got delivered to mile 68. Oh, yes, I did that. Brilliant. Some pizza. I have eaten a milkshake and the milkshakes, a lot of shakes. But the thing which the last few years really are what I crave is a nice cup of tea. I'll have a hot cup of sugary tea. I don't have sugar in my tea normally, but a hot cup of tea can you know, really make me feel much better just inside. But yeah, to answer your point about nutrition, I'm the same as you, Louise. It's sort of real food and whatever I can eat. You know, it'd be salt and vinegar crisps. It could be sweets. It's just like a succession of really bad junk food in the race.
That feels makes me feel so much better because I did the virtual marathon, which took me a very long time because I chose a, as Annie and everybody just
had a broken foot.
Oh, yeah. I had a broken foot, as we now know. It was sore. I do remember, actually, about 10 miles in. And Rob Rinder was running it with me. And we stopped for, I think, a coffee or something. And my husband said, how are you? I was like, my foot's a bit sore. I'm going to carry on. But no, it sort of fills me with the encouragement that, really, because, you know, that's how I feel those kind of things. Because there's sort of, I mean, you can take as many gels as you like, but they just make me feel sick.
Yeah.
Like eat whatever I've got, whether it's wine gums or what's-its. What's-its aren't very effective, actually.
No,
salty cashew nuts.
Nice.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
I think if I was going to do a road marathon, I would probably be, it will be three gels or three baby food, actually. Baby food, Louise. It's much nicer in your stomach.
Baby food.
They come in pouches. It's just sugar. It's just apples ground up. So I have those because they're kind on your stomach. So I'll have three pouches of baby food, same amount of calories and energy as a gel.
I'm
I'll
in.
Be quite strategic
this is
about
genius.
It.
Genius!
Yeah, baby
right.
food's the answer.
So strategic in what way?
So in a marathon, I will have three pouches of baby food, say, and I'll have one at mile... I normally have the first one at about mile 12. About mile 10, 12, depending how I'm feeling. Another one about mile 16 and the other one about mile 21. Just bang back. So I'll be when I'm running a half marathon or a marathon, that I'll be quite strategic about that. When I'm in the ultra marathons, that's when I'm calling Domino's. There's a difference.
But this is, you know, for everybody who's listening, this is a really worthwhile conversation because, I don't want to do down the gels, but I just don't know what's in them. At least in the baby food, you kind of know that it's for babies.
It's just mushed apple or banana. Try it in a training one. It's a lot kinder on your stomach because if I have gels, I know I'm going to have stomach cramps all afternoon. It kind of ruins the rest of my day. So I avoid those or I'll have very high energy milkshake sort of shots.
So, Susie, what is really interesting about you is you were 35 when this all started and you have changed your life to a place where it's quite unrecognisable. You were voted as the number one runner to follow on Instagram. So, I mean, could you ever have imagined, you look back to when you were 35, when you're a single mom, and as you said, not a lot of dosh, smoking, drinking, kind of doing all those things, you know, survival and all the rest of it. And then fast forward 10 years and you are being voted the number one runner to follow on Instagram. I mean, you know, pigs flying and all that.
It's absolutely mad. And a few people have said, oh, have you got to where you are? And there's been no strategy to it at all. I can remember watching London Marathon and somebody I worked with did London Marathon. They were training. They were telling me about it. I wasn't a runner. I didn't know anything about running. And I can remember watching it thinking, 26 miles, you know, being in awe of all these thousands of people. And just thinking, oh, wow, you know, that's just astonishing. I never, ever, ever thought, if you told that person that one day I would run 100 miles without stopping, it does call you a liar. I don't say it lightly and it is really cheesy, but running has completely changed my life. I had a 20-year career, which I no longer do. And it is my life. I do race commentary. I put a lot out on social. I'm very, 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 very lucky. And in that sort of Instagram world as well, you know, I'm old enough to be their mums. So it's really nice to be in the mix with these, you know, these really wonderful, active young people. And there I am, you know, hello.
Yeah, but you're not just inspiring the younger generation. You're inspiring people, you know, who are the same age as you, or people who would be listening to this podcast and thinking, well, maybe I'm 45 and I can't do this stuff. You know, it's really empowering, Susie. Thank you.
Oh, well, do you know what? This is one of the things which I am most passionate about. I mean, you look at some of the things that I have achieved. And I'm telling you, all of you, anybody listening right now, if you want to run across the Sahara Desert, you 100% can. You, it's just a question of confidence. And I had none when I started, and I found my confidence through these events and through running. I wouldn't have believed I could do some of the things I've done. And I've just thought, do you know what? You know, maybe I could. And for that very first ultra marathon through the desert, everybody told me I couldn't do it. I shouldn't do it. It was a stupid idea. And it all went into this little bank of like, maybe I could. Do you know what? I'm going to show them all I can. And it's a little bit of a negative spin on motivation, but it worked for me. I just thought, you know, I think I can. And if you think you can, then you can. It's just the training is a little piece of the jigsaw puzzle, but mentally, being there and thinking that you can counts for so much energy. And the great thing about ultra running and endurance events, as you've mentioned, it's not about the pace. You stopped and had a coffee. In ultra marathons, I'll have a cup of tea. It's not about the time and the minute mile. So if you aren't the fastest of runners and you are new to running and you have these dreams, it's completely, completely within your grasp to be able to do that. And anybody listening, I couldn't run 1 mile 10 years ago, not a single mile without stopping. It was, you know, it was incredibly difficult. It's probably the cigarettes, but it is possible. And it's just making sure that you keep hold of your dream, and you can genuinely believe you can get there.
I'm going to fix my foot, and then I'm going to do some more crazy stuff.
Yes,
I think.
Yes.
Go on, Annie.
You've sort of spoken about, you know, not going back 10 years, not having the time or the money, you know, to pay for gym classes or for those to fit into your life around being a mum and being at work. And I think this is an important message for people out there, because I think in today's society where everything's at a click of a button, you know, there is so much equipment out there. There are so many posh, amazing gyms, but actually you don't really need that stuff. You know, maybe you need a little bit more motivation, but I think what is really important, if we find our own internal motivation, that's when we make things happen. If we're dependent on going to, you know, a nice posh gym, or not even a posh gym, a gym to get the motivation, okay, it is nice to have the company of others. And some people really do thrive off, you know, the company of others and having running partners or going to classes and stuff. But I think listening to your story and reading about your story, what is so appealing to me is that really anyone can put on a pair of trainers and run around a football pitch or a park, right? Or start walking, you know. As you said, 10 years on, you're running 100 miles, but 10 years ago, you couldn't even run a mile. And I think that's a good message to people out there that are listening to this and saying, I can't do it.
Yeah. And actually, do you know what? One thing which has really positive thing that has come out of this sort of situation that we're in with lockdown is I have realized that there are so many videos and things out there. And I joined some friends in a virtual class, and that I found that really motivating in that sort of gym environment, class environment. I am rubbish. If you leave me to my own devices and tell me I've got to do some cross training, I'm terrible. But the one good thing out of lockdown is there's so many videos and things out there. You don't actually need to spend any money at all. You can, you know, maybe I did this once with a friend. We called each other. The video called At Home, and we took part in a free class just to be, you know, just to have some, make sure to sort of be accountable that we're both going to do it. And we did that a few times, and you actually don't need to, you know, to have lots of money. Sure, you know, you see on social media, the beautiful clothes, beautiful gym clothes, wonderful equipment. You don't really need those things. I can run a long way, but I am actually quite feeble in my upper body. I do a lot of my things off my own body weight, and you really don't need, to subscribe to all of those beautiful things to get motivated. And actually, getting started is the hardest thing those first few times, but you will reach a point quite quickly where you can feel the difference.
And we've got some lovely, I mean, there's some great classes on the Her Spirit app. I do the cycling one, which is, again, you know, just knowing that you're doing it with other people. So we've got a few questions for you, and they're both quite similar, actually. Sharon says, I found running hard in the past and struggled. In lockdown, I've got into doing it more. Can you give me some tips on keeping going over the next 8 weeks? And Tracy says, any tips as well? Both of them struggled with running in the past.
Yeah, it is. And actually, I have to say, both of you too, I could sympathise, because as we go into the winter months, for some reason, if you're anything like me, I find it so much harder when the weather is not great. I mean, my tip is there's a couple of things really, and that's if you can find a friend or somebody who's like-minded, or like I said, if it be somebody you know who isn't necessarily near you, but give them the ring beforehand. I'm going to run on Thursday at 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do 5K. Just have a little bit of accountability about it, because that helps. That helps, you know, keep you on in your sort of training schedule. So just try, if you can, link up with somebody or use social media. There is it gets a lot of stick, but there's a lot of really, really supportive people out there and online communities. So try and find your tribe of people who can help encourage you. And then the other thing is I never, ever regret a run. I can be sitting there, and I've taken an hour to put my socks on because I don't want to go out. I've put the kettle on for the third time. You know, it's normal to remember that, you know, even I've got friends who are elite athletes. It's totally normal to think I can't be asked, and it's normal, and don't beat yourself up about it. But I always remember I never, ever have regretted a run. And the worst bit is stepping out the door. Once you're out of the door and you've got five steps in, you're doing it. So just try and sort of, just the motivation is getting out of the door. And if you're out there and you're running and you feel a bit tired, then just stop. It's fine. You've got out.
Yeah. My thing is, for example, when it's a wet run, and it's, you know, there are puddles, I just think, well, you know what? Let's just go in the first puddle.
Yeah,
because then it's done.
Yeah,
the first puddle is the worst puddle.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes when the weather's bad, the thought of it's actually is always worse than reality. And then you can feel double smug when you come in because you've gone out and it's raining and you've got it done.
Oh my God, I'm so in that camp as well. If you can get it done early in the day, get it done. If you leave it till later on, if you have to, then that's fair enough. But I've perfected the art of procrastination. But as you say, that's my motto too. You never regret a run, but you'll always regret it if you've given in and not done it.
I'm so interested, Susie, to pick up some of your thoughts about, and this is quite personal, but I mean, for example, my husband is incredible. So on these extreme triathlons, and for example, the virtual run that I did, you can't do them. You have to have support. And I'm sure you've done lots of races like that. So you have to have your support and they carry all, you know, get all your stuff. They meet you in the right places. I mean, he's utterly unbelievable. And I couldn't have done these races without him. Now, you do race with your husband. And what's, you know, that for me is a really interesting psychology, because I mean, you know, that you're obviously each other's support system. And so how is that?
Do you know what? When he was my boyfriend and not my husband, the wonderful, quite early doors, I asked him to crew me for my very first 100-miler, which I was dreadfully nervous about. And it's one of those things.
That's a real big ask, isn't it?
It was a big ask. And it was also quite risky because it's like going on holiday for the first time. You think, how's this going to pan out? But luckily for me, he was extraordinary. I mean, your true self, but you are extremes of yourself when you're deep into those sorts of events. You know, you're I was sort of a little bit, I was very overtired. Let's leave it at that. But he was absolutely exceptional. And when I did Ironman, I didn't want to do it by myself and I didn't tell him. So I just entered both of us and he just got an email saying, you are now doing Ironman.
You didn't.
And he was like, what? And I was like, I can't face the training myself. But there's been, one race, we've run 100 miles together side by side. And actually I entered the race thinking he'd crew me, which is, as you say, being the support and making sure you get everything. And he said, oh, I've entered it as well. So we had to run that together. And it was really beautiful, actually. We probably said about 10 words in the last 60 miles to each other. But it was just, we didn't need to say anything. It was just knowing somebody's there. It was really lovely.
that's choking me up. I remember there was one, and I've seen you blog about this particular thing. So in the Patagon Man, I'd done the 3.8 kilometer swim, done the 180k bike ride. Let's get this right. It was really, really tough. And then into the marathon, and he was allowed to run. And I say run, it wasn't really running, the last 10k with me. And I mean, I knew all I needed to do was get to him and then he would basically not carry me physically, but mentally carry me through the last 10K. Anyway, we had this weird moment. And the reason I want to talk to you about it is that we're running along and there is the extraordinary rock faces. And I was like, can you see the people watching us in the rocks?
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say.
Where this is going.
And then there are these horses galloping beside us and it's dusk and it's dark and there's no one around. Basically, I was hallucinating. Yeah. I wasn't hallucinating the horses.
No, you're hallucinating.
But the people. I was hallucinating. And you've written about this. Is this common?
Yes. I think it's fueling when you haven't got your fueling right. In fact, in that 100 mile, it was my husband and I, we were running from Key Largo to Key West in Florida. So all along all the Florida Keys. And it sounded beautiful. Actually, we're just running along a highway. And we both started to hallucinate at about the same time. I saw red wine on picnic tables and he saw faces in the trees. And we were like, I think we need some caffeine. And we did have some caffeine in it and it took the edge off. He will pace me as you call it, the last sort of, you know, 30 miles or whatever of a race, and he does it without complaint, without any glory at all. And I think the hardest thing he did was when I did the 24-hour track race, so running around a 400-meter track for 24 hours and it rained for 21. It was soul destroying for me. It was soul destroying for him because he just had to stand there in the most underwhelming viewable race and people just like incredibly slowly around a 400-meter track for a day in the pouring rain, bless him. I genuinely could not do these things, and that's support, and that's his physical support. But he's just so enabling as a husband. He never ever says no, you know, you can't do that, or it's unquestionable. He lets me do these things and just supports me without question. So I'm incredibly lucky.
I feel exactly like you, and I hope that he does listen to this podcast, because yeah, without him, it's not possible. Mm. It's not possible on so many levels.
I've actually got to the point now where he's done been at all my 100 milers, and I've said to him, I think you have to be at all of them going forward, because I don't know if I could do it without him, because I've never had to, which is a little bit worrying. Yeah.
Well, you could, but
probably
yeah,
could, I mean, yeah.
Oh, anyway, so yeah. And also I just think one day, I mean, hopefully it sounds really strange, but if anybody ever asked me to be their support in a race, I would love to be that, because I just know how important it is, and you can't really overestimate. Mm. You know, this it's just incredible. It's an incredibly generous thing for people to do, actually. Mm. Annie, gosh. Getting emotional again. So you and my favorite thing on one of the races was when, I'm sure I've said this before in the podcast, but I turned up in, I mean, I was crying. So this is in the middle of the bike ride, hysterically crying, because it was so difficult. And I'm just like, that heaving with tears. And then everybody's running up because they all think I'm actually ill or had a terrible accident. And he goes, don't worry, she'll be fine. I'll just give her a cup of tea. Yes. And I was. Yeah.
He doesn't put up with my drama. He's very low key about it all. It's just
that's the thing, isn't it?
Steadying the ship, I think.
Do you know, that's absolutely the key. You know, however dramatic I am, he's just like, do you want a Mars bar? Or not Mars bar, or Snickers, obviously. But yeah, it's really, it's a lovely thing.
She's all right. She's all right. She'll keep going. Yeah, he knows when there's something really, really wrong. And he knows when I'm just being a bit dramatic.
Yeah, I think being dramatic's fine, as long as they know that's all there is. Annie.
Susie, you were talking about your lovely husband. What about your daughter, your 19-year-old lovely daughter? Mm. Have you got her into running?
No, not at all. She can't stand it. No, I think that's a bit me. I think she had to stand at one too many muddy finish lines in her sort of formative years, from the ages of about 8 to sort of 13. And in that way that you, as a teenager, you don't really want to do what your mum's doing. So she's not really that interested. We did do a couple of 5K races when she was young enough for me to be able to sort of cajole her into it. But now, no. Now and again, right, this is what I crave. Now and again, I'll do something. I broke a world record on a treadmill, and only twice has she said, really well done, I'm proud of you. And then I'm like that, oh. So it's quite hard to get any sort of, you know, appreciation for what I do out of a teenager, to be really honest.
It's because you're her mum. That's what it is.
It's because I'm her mum. And I like to think at some point, you know, maybe when she's sort of a little bit older, maybe a mum herself thinks, huh, my mum, that was pretty cool.
But what was the world record?
The world record? It was running the furthest distance on a treadmill in 12 hours. It was horrible. It was truly horrible. I broke the world record, but it was actually on a BBC breakfast afterwards. And it got broken a little while afterwards, which is totally fine because it was so utterly horrible. But yeah, that was a tough day. I got seasick, which was quite an unusual sensation because I was just running in one spot. And the thing about treadmills is if you're running on the road, you naturally vary your speed, whether you realise it or not. But on a treadmill, I was just locked into one pace.
What pace did you run at?
Do you know what? The honest truth is I didn't want to know. So they set it in kilometres because I think it was 10 minute miling, okay. 9 minute miling, something like that for 12 hours, something like that. It wasn't, maybe faster. I don't know. I did 68 miles, so I had to do the maths.
Honestly.
I didn't want to know how fast I was running.
Honestly. And now you're a sponsored athlete. I mean, what an amazing thing. So that means that running can be your life, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really, really lucky. Mizuno are my sponsors. I work with them. They're really, really fantastic. I've also got a Polar watch sponsor, and then Fulfill a nutrition protein bar sponsor. So, extraordinary. I don't know how I've got to this point in my life. I'm just so lucky. And I think, I mean, you've touched on it, but I'm aware of where I sort of sit in the scheme of running with brands. You know, I'm not young. I'm a mum. I'm 45 years old. You know, I rarely will podium. Now and again, I might do, but I'm just doing my thing. And I'd like to think that I can show other people that, you know, they can do it too. I can tell you now, there's going to be loads of people that listen to this podcast who will turn up to a race with me and be able to beat me. So I'm not extraordinary in that sense. I just really enjoy running and being, you know, being able to take part in these events. And, yeah. And I'm really grateful that there's some brands that, that can align themselves with that too.
I think that's really powerful because you're right. It's not what you assume, is it? Mm. And I think maybe hopefully that's a measure that perhaps things are changing, that you can be older and be good at stuff.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just great to see that.
Yeah, totally. There are so many people listening to this who can do the things that I do.
It was an interesting conversation that we were having with Dr. Louise Newson in our last podcast, where she was sort of speaking about women, you know, the average age a woman lives to these days is very different. So maybe we need to start changing our perception and, you know, and our idea on what is old, in the sense that sort of, yes, going back 50 years ago, if someone said, at 35, I'm going to start running and do endurance runner, and fast forward 10 years, 45, still doing that stuff, sponsored athlete, they'd be, oh my gosh, she's an old bird. But actually, yeah. If you think of the average age is around 82, you know, it's not old at all, yeah. Is it? You might be old to a 15-year-old, but you're not old to a vast majority of the population.
And Annie, the really, really interesting thing is that if for endurance sports, women of a certain age excel at them. Because it's not necessarily about being pacey. It's about, I'd like to think it's something the way our brains are wired. If you look at it statistically, the further the distance, the more it evens out. So some of those world records, those 100-mile trail world records, they're set by females. We now have females winning. We've got a race called the Spine, and a woman won that outright in the UK. So this is really interesting. Then also in those endurance races, statistically speaking, if you are a woman in her early 40s, you are much, much, much more likely to finish the race than a guy in his 20s, which I think is extraordinary. And I'm really, really interested in that. And I just had the news last week that I'm turning slightly perimenopausal. And I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to plow on through. And I mean, I know Louise has talked about that. And I'm going to document my journey.
You must. Please, Susie.
I think it's so important. Yeah. I've only just found out. And when you spoke about it, you know, and I think, you know, there's all these reasons which you might come up with, thinking that I can't do this. There's no reason why you can't get out there and enjoy sport.
Susie, you must go back to listen. I think it was our last podcast with Louise Newson, because, you know, there's so much information in that. And I mean, all I would say is from where I am at, you know, you do need to go and see your doctor, because, you know, it can really affect you in ways that both physically and mentally, which are really tough.
Yeah.
And please do blog about it. And tell
I will. Yeah, I've only just found out. I had a few symptoms and they said,
do you know what? So funny. Really lovely to see you like you're making it sound like it's a good thing, which it is in many ways.
Totally. I'm glad I've got a reason. Well, I was like, I always think, is it something to do with my thyroid? And very similar symptoms.
Yes, of course you do.
Very similar symptoms. I was like, I need to dispel, it's that or that. And then we've come to the conclusion that it's just, I'm just getting perimenopausal symptoms. And I was like, oh, at least I know. I'm going to embrace this. And now,
yeah,
now
no, do.
I have a reason. Yeah, so.
Okay. Oh, that's brilliant. And before we go, because I know you've got an appointment, haven't you, at some point. So tell me, and we want to know your five top tips for women who are listening for their best year yet. And I know you're going to have some great ones.
Okay, so basically my top five tips having the best year yet. Number one is to celebrate those small wins. It's very, very easy to have an end goal, like a big race or whatever that is. But make sure you celebrate those small wins. That day you didn't want to go out and run and you went out and you got 2 miles on, whatever it is. Make sure you pat yourself on the back and don't forget how far you've come from that very first time you stepped out the door to run. So celebrate those little small wins, because it's so easy to overlook those. My second tip is to not worry about anybody else. I mean, comparison is the thief of joy. You can go on social media and everybody looks like they're having an amazing, lovely time. And like I said, I don't necessarily post that race photo where I'm looking about 85, right? It's very, very easy to think, oh, they're all having a lovely time. I've talked about how it's taken me an hour to put my socks on. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing. Just think about yourself and how you're feeling. My third one is, especially during these times, it's really, really good to have a little goal. Now, that might be a race, or it might be a virtual race, or it might simply be there's a hill or a long stretch of road near you that you want to get down and try and, you know, get through it without stopping, or try and get through it a little bit faster. Small, achievable goals rather than one great big massive event at the end. Those are really good. And those also help my first point about celebrating small wins. My fourth one, I touched on this earlier, is to find your tribe. So these are people that are going to enable you, people that are going to help you get out the door. These are people that you enjoy being around. We don't have Parkrun, alas, at the moment, but there is support online. You can find a community online. You can find a couple of local people. Just find people that make what you're doing, that exercise, whatever it is you're doing, more enjoyable. It doesn't always have to be excruciating, hot, sweaty, you know, difficult. You can just move your body and enjoy it. So make sure you find people that are on the same wavelength as you. That really, really helps. And my last one is really important. That's believing yourself, having a little bit of confidence in what you do. It's so easy to self-criticize. I've been guilty of it. I think we all are. We all dwell on the things which perhaps aren't quite good enough. Do you know what? You know, you're brilliant. You're getting out there. You're doing it. Just, you know, pat yourself on the back and have a little bit of confidence in what you're doing. And confidence will take you so much further. If you think you can do it, you really, really, really can.
Susie Chan, you're an absolute legend, isn't she,
She's
Annie?
She's brilliant. I love this chat. Really loved it. And I love just your whole story. I mean, you said something about, you know, not being an extraordinary athlete, but you're an extraordinary person and you have an extraordinary story. And I think that is going to motivate a lot of people. And if you can change lives, you are doing something extraordinary.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a big virtual hug, Susie. And one day, yes, I'll see you.
We should go out for a run. We should go out
Let's
for a run.
Let's do that. When my foot is fixed.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to come and see you.
Hasn't seemed to stop you up until now, but yes, get your foot fixed.
I don't know why I'm letting it stop me at all, to be honest with you.
Get it fixed and we'll go out for a run.
Susie, thank you so much.
Oh, what a great guest. I've been really inspired. She's made me smile. I needed to smile today. What a lovely person Susie is.
She's incredible, isn't she? And she's just, I think that whole thing we've touched on, being a little bit older, being a woman, you know, coming from non-athletic background and doing these incredible things. I just think that's absolutely, I mean, she inspires me and she's going to inspire me to get back, to get fixed and get back, Annie, get back on the trails.
I think she's in a great position to sort of motivate a lot of women who would think that I'm in my 40s, it's too late. And I think it's really important to say, you know, too late comes very late. It's not in your 40s, it's not in your 50s. You know, it's brilliant and very inspiring. Lou, I've got breaking news.
What have you got? What?
The breaking news is actually there is no news. There are no eggs.
I wanted to know about the eggs. There are no eggs. My friend who's got, my neighbour who gives me the chicken, the eggs, said that they don't like laying in the cold in the winter. So it may be that.
Ours are commoners. They're hybrids. They do lay all year round. But, you know, maybe we've been shortchanged here. I don't know. Maybe they're not going to come. I don't know. We're well into 6 weeks. They said probably, actually they said 4 to 6 weeks. So listen, just watch this space. Okay.
Send me a picture as soon as there is one. But you still love the chickens.
Oh, I love them. Listen, for anyone out there ever thinking about having chickens as a pet, these chickens have cuddles better than my big fat cat does, who is not interested. She puts her claws out. These are, they nestle into your chest and they make these purring noises. So highly recommend chickens as pets.
Oh, Annie, so lovely to chat as ever. Take care. Take care of your chickens.
Take care. Lots of love. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm one of the co-founders of Her Spirit. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. These podcasts would not have been made possible without the support of the brilliant Medichex. Medichex offer an easy and affordable way to check your health with their simple and personalised blood tests. From hormones and nutrition to cholesterol and diabetes, there is something for everyone. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. Have a great day.